gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. StephanieMiller.com, the website. Why, I was there in the media section, Chris.
Yes.
And, from Inside Radio, it says Dial Global would like to congratulate top talker Stephanie Miller on being named one of 2010's most influential women in radio.
Really?
Why, check me. Perhaps you'll treat me with the respect I'm entitled to from now on.
Computer says no.
Well, yeah, probably.
Can't you give me the respect that I'm entitled to? What?
All right. That's why we must be... We're lousy with guests today. Good Lord. We have Chris Matthews coming up in just a few minutes. David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times. We have Carl Frisch from Media Matters. David Mattingly from CNN, mm-hmm. reporting from the coast. And Representative Frank Pallone. Why? Clearly because I'm one of the most embarrassed, whatever.
Yeah, well, how did that happen? Who nominated you for that?
Because there's only three of us. It's...
Oh, that's it. Okay.
We probably all are.
you know, Randy
it's
Rose.
Me and Randy and the two Lauras. Who else? That's
yeah.
it.
Well, Heidi from Frosty, Heidi, and Frank.
Yeah, her too, sure.
Okay.
I'm sure she is too. Mm-hmm. All right. in the meantime, we have... all right, so the president's speech last night. Let's go right to Representative Jim McDermott of the great state of Washington and see what his thoughts are. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm one of the most influential women in radio, apparently.
I listened to that. I was stunned and amazed.
I'm not sure how to take that. Congressman, don't be nervous. Now, you know, we've been having this argument the last few days on the show that I I am an unapologetic fan of this president. And it's not that I think we can never criticize, but I just feel like the guy can't win. And you know, so even last night, some progressive critics were criticizing the speech. You know, this morning I saw Joe and Mika liked it, and some other people on MSNBC. What were your thoughts on the president's speech?
Well, I think the president is facing a real dilemma. That is, you have come into a situation that has been run by somebody else for a long time, and you're trying to fix things as fast as you can in every direction. And this one, obviously, at least from his point of view, I don't know that anybody told him it was coming. So it was a surprise. He has reacted as reasonably as one can. I think he could have gone around and waved his arms and made a lot of noise, but it
right.
wouldn't have changed anything.
Right. Well, you know, the other thing, I think, unfortunately, he has such a high bar, even for speeches. You know, if you're thinking of the big campaign stadium speeches, then you're like, well, he's not. Where's the emotion and where's the anger and what, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I think that he addressed pretty much everything that he could regarding the crisis last night, didn't he? I mean,
as far as I could tell, he talked about what he's going to do about it and how he's going to make them pay for it. And the law is pretty clear that they are responsible for the cleanup, and he's going to put the money aside and actually have somebody look at it and make sure that it's actually being put into the fund.
Right. See,
I don't
maybe
know what you can do at the beginning other than that.
I agree, Congressman. I mean, maybe it's me. I have George Bush smoke him out, dead or alive, bring it on fatigue. And I don't need a cowboy in the Oval Office anymore. And so I think that, you know, again, some people have said this, but it's almost like it's like acting reviews. Oh, he's not acting angry enough at BP. I mean, I would rather have him do something. And it seems like legally this escrow fund is the best way to do that, isn't it?
Sounds like it to me. I mean, I'm like you. I've heard about all the throwing your arms around and acting like you're wild and you're going to make things really happen. Nothing happened with all that drag them out by their hair talk. And so the president, I much prefer this as a way of going. I think, however, he's into a very difficult situation here, and I don't know that anybody has a really good answer for what to do, because we're learning things now about what's going on down there that are not something that we've known about in the past.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it was Keith Olbermann last night, who I love, but, you know, was saying that, you know, he should have said, you know, the executive that told him drilling was safe, he should have been holding his empty suit. I mean, we had George Bush with the wanting Osama bin Laden's head on a pike. All that kind of stuff. I would prefer, the one thing I think he did say that was significant is about the moratorium. Like, look, mm-hmm. We are going to stop and figure this out. And you know, you would never have gotten that out of the Bush administration, correct? You've already got Republicans screaming, why aren't we drilling?
Right. That's the real difference here is that he has done some things that you would never, ever have heard from the other side. And I think that it's very clear that he is trying to measure his response and make as much impact as he can. But there's some things that are going to be very difficult to do, and I think he knows that. And sometimes the American public.
Well, if we can't. Congressman, I mean, if we can't get, cap and trade legislation done now, when can we? I mean, I thought he made as good a case as you could last night for now is the time. Look at this disaster. If we are going to get this done, that is time to wean ourselves, you know, and move toward clean energy. Didn't he say that?
Yes. And I think he's absolutely correct. This is the best time we've had in a long time. Sometimes you have to take advantage, as he did with the defeat of the senatorial campaign in Massachusetts. That's why the health care bill got through, was because suddenly everybody saw, geez, we better get to work here and do something. And I think you take those things which look like disasters and use them as opportunities to make something happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to what else you guys are working on, because, you know, while all the the press attention is on the oil spill, you're trying to, I mean, people are still hurting out there, and that to me seems to be the problem number one is jobs. You're working to extend unemployment benefits, right? Tell us about that.
Well, we have begun the process of talking about what we're going to do with long-term unemployment. I think people have to come to grips with the fact that most responsible people who are making predictions about our economy are saying that this is not going to be over in a year or two. We're looking at perhaps as long as 2015 before we get back to the level of unemployment that we had. Now, in that interim, the middle class is just going to be decimated because they're going to use all their IRA, which means all their future pension money will be gone. They may lose their house because we haven't figured out how to deal with the foreclosure problem. And I think these are both issues that I'm working on, and I'm hopeful we can come up with some proposals that will make sense.
Well, I mean, Steny Hoyer said what the president is saying is we need to expend additional dollars to make sure we don't have significant layoffs. I think it's accurate that there's spending fatigue not only in Capitol Hill but around the country. People are concerned about the debt level, and we are as well. But clearly you cannot continue to stimulate an economy that's still struggling to get out of a deep ditch that we found it in about 18 months ago. So, once again, you're going to hear from our friends on the right, that this, spend, when, you know, clearly many economists, including Krugman, thought this was not big enough to start with, and it clearly is sending jobs in the right direction, right? But that yes. We need to help people more.
I've been reading the book Free Fall by Joe Stiglitz, and when you read that, you realize that we simply, or at least from his point of view, and I see no reason to doubt him, we simply haven't done enough, and we've got to get on with it, or we're going to be winding up like the Japanese, where they had a whole decade that was lost because they didn't, they stopped too soon in their stimulation of the economy.
And the president said, I mean, I think what immediately is going to happen is states are going to be forced to enact massive layoffs of teachers, firefighters, and other employees.
Yep, that's what's going on. That is the sort of untalked about aspect of this. People think that, well, somehow if we deal with it up at the Wall Street level, we'll have fixed everything. But the fact is we're decimating our teacher ranks. And if we're going to move forward as the country who has education and ideas and creativity and innovation and all these things, you got to have educated kids. So you can't decimate the schools in the short run and think that's going to work in the long run.
Yep, absolutely. Congressman Jim McDermott, thanks for so much for taking time for us and for doing that good work in the trenches. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right, there he goes, Representative Jim McDermott.
Yay.
Of the great state of Washington. I am nearly crushed under my email, Chris. And as you know, we've accomplished something very rare in radio.
What?
Half the people have turned off the show and canceled the podcast because I allow too much dissent from naysaying mooks like you.
Oh, so they
and
want
the
to
other half
squelch
have turned it off and canceled their podcast because I am too much of an Obama apologist.
That's right.
So the magical thing is apparently no one is listening right
yes.
now but you and I. We have accomplished what Rush Limbaugh has always said. Apparently there is no one listening anymore.
Oh, dear.
Wow, I feel like the president. I can't win. It doesn't matter. I either allow too much dissent or I don't allow enough for something. All right.
A friend of mine just wrote in and said that he thinks the only people, the only group that was happy with Obama's speech last night is walruses.
And perhaps a couple of eggmen.
All right. Well, sure.
Mm-hmm. 16 minutes after the hour. Here's the kind of geek I am.
What?
Everything's okay in my life because there's a Chris Matthews special on the far right tonight. Oh, it is on my calendar. I am such a cable geek.
Maybe he's atoning for you calling him a right winger.
Shush, stop bringing that up. We have moved forward.
We have? Okay.
Chris Matthews from MSNBC next on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Have no fear. Steffi's here. It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
What an American girl. 21 minutes after the hour, it is the Stephanie Miller Show, carry the 4 to 5. That means I only have how many hours until Chris Matthews' special is on? This is, I've waited all month for this.
Have you?
Mm-hmm. Mm. And even longer for this. Good morning, Chris Matthews.
Good morning, Stephanie. I'm listening to your byplay there. I love it. I mean, I'm going to rip the bark off tonight, not because of what I say in my commentary, but in what the voices of the right say. It is so stunning to hear people talk about this government being a tyranny, of it being illegitimate, foreign-based, and that we need our Second Amendment rights to ward it off. In other words, we need gunplay.
Right.
It is astounding.
I've been watching these promos, Chris, and I seriously, I'm so excited about the special tonight. It's the biggest thing on my social calendar this month.
Well, we hear Orly Tate in a Russian accent, right. And you hear Alan Keyes, and you hear Pat Buchanan of old, and you hear Dick Armey. And, God, I wish I'd been able to get Sharon Angle on, who now says we need Second Amendment remedies when we don't like which way the Congress is going.
Right.
Amazing
stuff. What is the? It's the. I saw the clips. Is it the Michigan militia?
No, one of the groups. Yeah, but they all have a residence. In fact, the guy in the Michigan militia we talked to, he says basically we're saying the same thing as the Tea Party people. They all fly that same flag. They went back and got the revolutionary flag with the "Don't Tread on Me" with the rattlesnake. It was the Gadsden flag, and they now are flying it against our own honestly elected government. This is the weird thing. This was a flag flown against the British. And trying to go after a foreign occupying force or an oppressor, they now look at the federal government that way. We have to fight them, and we have to be armed to do it.
But Chris, you've been chronicling politics in this country so long, and I think ordinarily we go with this Michigan militia; they're just crazy right wing fringe. But you talk about in the special, they hit the campaign trail with Rand Paul, who is now the candidate, Republican candidate.
What about Sharon Angle, Rand Paul, Nikki Haley? Listen to them all, and you hear the same message. They're pandering to their very far-out base, which is the government is somehow illegitimate. Even Dick Armey will not disown the birthers. But you know why? Because 32%, according to the latest CBS poll, of Republicans believe that Barack Obama is foreign-born. 32% of Republicans. So it's a lot of Americans who have bought into the idea that this government is not legitimate.
Chris, you must have, this Rand Paul, the Civil Rights Act thing, my dad ran with Goldwater in 64, and I, were you as stunned as I was that we're having this debate again in 2010?
Hey, look, I remember when Libby Miller came to Worcester, Mass. To campaign. I remember the whole thing.
One of my hot older sisters.
I know all about it. I remember everything, Stephanie.
I know you
I am
too.
Methuselah.
But I mean, my dad.
These debates, the funny thing is, Stephanie, that these debates and these experiences that America has gone through over the years, whether it's the McCarthy period where people were questioned if they were liberal, they must be a communist or something like it. And then you have people like Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota, an elected congressperson, saying she wants the media to investigate all Democratic members of Congress for anti-American attitudes. You have Dick Armey saying he thinks this administration is packed with people with anti-American beliefs. This is the kind of McCarthy language we heard back then. It was so destructive. Here it is back again. The Civil Rights Act, the Public Accommodations Act, that's the kind of thing we debated at Holy Cross. We debated that in high school, whether to have the federal government use the Interstate Commerce Clause to outlaw discrimination in public accommodations, hotels and restaurants.
And,
and you know what? They should have, this guy Rand Paul should have had those arguments in high school, not on television.
And, Chris, here's another fun fact for you. Libby Miller's husband went to Holy Cross. How about that for one degree of Chris Matthews separation?
That came, you know what? She married him after she made her tour, so something happened.
Yeah.
So the special is The Rise of the New Right, airs at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And, Chris, that'll be repeating, right?
Yeah, hopefully. We'll do it at midnight again, midnight Eastern, which is, you know, 9 o'clock Western. And I hope we repeat it a lot because I think this will rip the bark off. And the best thing about a documentary, as my wife reminds me, she was a journalist, documentaries simply document. They don't argue. You will hear all the voices of the militia people, the birthers, the Tea Party people, the Oath Keepers, the whole crowd of them, and you will hear them say this themselves, this stuff. It's not me saying it.
Chris, is the Tea Party good news for the Democratic Party? I mean,
well,
are they just moving these candidates farther to the lunatic right fringe?
Well, it's probably saved Harry Reid's seat. It's probably short-circuited the guys who wanted his job, like Schumer and Durbin.
Are the Democrats going to win Kentucky?
I think that's a call. I think that's a pick, as we say in sports. I think that's close. I think Rand Paul could still win. He's not an unattractive person. If you meet him, you like him. He's thoughtful. He's just so primitive in his thinking. You think he would have worked these arguments out a lot longer ago. He was forced to say, and I mean forced is the right word to say, he supports the Civil Rights Act now.
I think
these are weird situations, but, you know, the country's angry about the economy, so it is the atmosphere in which Rick Santorum won in Pennsylvania. So it's an atmospheric situation where people to the very far right normally have a shot to get to win. Yeah, they do have a shot to win, to be honest about it.
Well, you know, I think it was Al Franken that actually said of Goldwater in the 64 civil rights, he said, you know, he was wrong and he made his whole party wrong. I mean, you know, my dad voted for the Civil Rights Act, but he was forced to defend Goldwater, obviously, on the campaign trail. And I mean, the fact that somebody in 2010 is trying to revisit this issue, I just think is disastrous news for the Republican
Party.
Well,
it's a question of common sense. I mean, we could have waited till we got three quarters of the or gotten basically a veto proof or whatever, something like it would have taken 67 senators and then three quarters of the states and all that to get a civil rights bill through by statute like that, or rather through constitutional change. But everybody recognized at the time that that would have taken decades to do it that way, and you had to do it through statute to the Interstate Commerce Clause, and the Supreme Court was liberal at the time, was a Warren court, and they reviewed it positively. I think they did it unanimously. So it's always going to be a question, what is interstate commerce?
Chris, in all the time you've been documenting politics, I mean, I know I've heard, braise Helen Thomas, not about her latest thing, but I know her, I heard her recently say, I've never seen it this bad out there. I mean, in terms of what your documentary just covered, are you afraid? I mean, is the violence the sort of mix the worst you've seen it or not?
Stephanie, you mentioned 64 when your dad ran. Let me talk to you about 63. Going into the last part of 63, there was a lot of atmospherics out there which were really bad, where people were calling Kennedy a communist and Adlai Stevenson was spit on in Dallas. And there was almost a barometric uptick where all of a sudden people were acting really crazy. And it really didn't have that much to do with events. Kennedy had gotten us through the Cuban Missile Crisis. It had a lot to do with the Civil Rights Movement, however. The push in 63 by Kennedy in June, the March on Washington in August. There was the fear that civil rights were coming. There's no doubt that social change raises the temperature. The fact we have an African-American president, yes. The fact we have a bad economy, yes. These are factors
that raise
the temperature.
I'm hitting a hard break that you know so well. 7 o'clock tonight, it is called The Rise of the New Right, Chris Matthews documentary on MSNBC. Don't miss it. Chris, thanks so much.
Stephanie, thank you.
All right, there he goes. He was a fan of My Hot Sister like many men in the 60s. 29 minutes after the hour, right back on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
I make you laugh.
Ha!
I'm here to amuse you. What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 34 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. It's true, my entire social life this month consists of Chris Matthews' special on the Rise of the New Right tonight. MSNBC, 7 o'clock. I bought special wine.
And, all right. And packing.
I have, by the way, we're having an important guest pileup. I'm going to have to take the Bruckner. 1-800-STEPH. It's an expressway here in New York.
Oh.
1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. David Sanger is the chief Washington correspondent of the New York Times and author of The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts and the Challenges to American Power. He joins us now. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Stephanie. Good to be back with you.
Nice to have you back. So let's start with the president's speech last night. What were your thoughts?
Well, it was something that was probably a bit overdue in that he needed to get out and explain in pretty clear terms, and I thought he used somewhat martial language in describing this as a siege and a battle. But at the same time, it was remarkably lacking in specifics, I thought, about what he was going to do of a legislative nature or even the legal basis for getting BP to open up this separate fund that would be administered by a third party.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was sort of an interesting omission. It would have been understandable on, week one or week two of this, but it was a little harder to understand 2 months in.
Well, we've been having this debate, David, on the show, and I just think that, first of all, this is really, as everybody uses the term, but I guess an unprecedented disaster. And I think that in some areas, of course, he can't do anything right. He's not mad enough. He's not doing this. He's not doing that. I sort of felt like he said pretty much what he needed to say last night. I was saying that I think sometimes there's a high bar for him, and you've covered him, even for speeches, right? I mean, people expect miracles just from a speech of his.
There is a high bar, and in fact, I think to some degree that bar has lowered in recent times only because the speeches that one gives in a campaign are so
right.
different than the speeches one gives as the commander-in-chief.
Everybody's like, where's the red states and the blue states and the rock star cheers? And
right. one of the more interesting features of this whole debate is that people who 3 and 4 months ago were beating up on him as a socialist bringing big government to America
right.
are now the same people standing up saying, where is the U.S. government in running this operation, restraining BP, cleaning up the mess itself?
Oh, no, we've had progressives on this show, David, saying, oh, he's not tough enough on BP because he's a corporatist.
Yeah.
And you've covered him.
You've got to pick your poison out here. A socialist, a corporatist, or something in between.
Right. But I think you covered that, in your book, didn't you? That, I mean, this president has always been a bit of a prism or something that people have, in some cases, I think, seen what they want to see.
That's right. You remember well. He ran almost as a blank slate, in part because he had so little experience in governance, just the period of time in both the state Senate in Illinois
right.
and
so,
then the U.S. Senate.
So people projected
really
sort of their hopes and dreams on him and
right.
to some degree.
We
right?
didn't know what kind of executive he would be. And so, you've seen the left surprised by the fact that he's launched more predator attacks than George Bush ever did in Pakistan. You've seen the left surprised by the fact that he has pursued some of President Bush's second term policies with more vigor than they expected. Some people argue in Washington, I'm not sure I subscribe to this, but some have made the case that there was a bigger difference between the first Bush term and the second Bush term than between at least some of the foreign policies of the second Bush term and the first Obama term.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's interesting. One of the things that's come up is, oh, he's not doing what he campaigned on. And to me, David, he is doing things that he campaigned on, isn't he? I mean,
that's the
thing. He always said, I'm going to finish the job in Afghanistan. He talked about opening offshore drilling. It's not like there was some kind of big fake out, do you think?
No, I think that's right. And, I think that some on the left perhaps weren't listening as carefully. So, for example, when they heard him discuss Iraq and Afghanistan, they heard the part where he said, I'm going to pull out of Iraq. And in fact, they're on track to doing so. You'll have 50,000 troops, it looks like, by this summer, and on the way down to, if not complete withdrawal, just about complete withdrawal, within a year or so. They weren't right. listening as carefully when he talked about increasing the numbers in Afghanistan. And of course, when President Obama, took the oath of office, we had about 24,000 or 25,000 troops in Afghanistan. We now have 94,000.
Right. David, I got an email from somebody. My co-hosts here on the show have been somewhat critical of the president in recent days. And Dean in Appleton, it reminds me of your book a bit. He says, let Chris and Jim not forget that Obama pulled us away from the brink of a depression, turned the job situation around, began the process of closing Gitmo and winding down Iraq, completely changed our relationship with the rest of the world, began the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, passed lesser-known but important pieces of legislation like the Lilly Ledbetter Act, and generally started work on every campaign promise he made. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. It is interesting that some people certainly still, you know, do support this president and think that he is against a very obstructionist Republican Party trying to move forward with the things that he talked about. Do you agree?
Well, he certainly, you know, as I call the book The Inheritance because he inherited bigger problems, I think, than any American president since maybe Franklin Roosevelt took over in 1933 or maybe Truman when he took over just as after Roosevelt died and had to create an entirely new national security structure for the United States. But at the same time, I think that while the president has pursued and completed a good number, not all of his campaign promises, it's interesting to see those ones that he's run up against the wall on. For example, he promised to close Gitmo within a year and made a big deal of that in the first week of his presidency. I would be willing to wager a bet. Have me back on in 2.5 years, Stephanie, and we'll see if I'm right on this. I think it's going to be difficult to close Guantanamo by the end of his first term, the way they're headed now.
Well, I think what frustrates progressives, David, and I know you've seen this on issue after issue, is the problem is, you know, we don't march in lockstep like the Republican Party does. I mean, Bush rammed through every horrible policy that he wanted, whereas, you know, the problem is we have these sort of conservative Dems or whatever you want to call them, whether it's an issue like Gitmo or not, that it ends up. So it's not just Republicans. They sometimes get help from some Democrats, right?
Well, that is true. But, you know, you have the most amazing thing about the past year is the Republican Party has gone into a split of its own and, you know, cannot resolve itself between the Tea Party faction and the sort of more traditional establishment Republican Party.
Yeah, and that's the good news is both parties are tearing themselves apart.
So sometime between now and the time they have to nominate a presidential candidate, they're going to have to decide whether that candidate, which branch is that candidate's going to come from, the traditional establishment, which I think most political analysts, and I'm not much of one of those.
All I can say as a political analyst is this is going to be good fun, isn't it, 2012?
Yeah, it's the best way to win an election, or whether it's going to be from the more extreme side of the party.
Yep, absolutely. The book is, The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts and the Challenges to American Power. David Sanger, chief correspondent for The New York Times. Thanks so much. We appreciate your time as always.
Stephanie, anytime.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thanks. There he goes, David Sanger. Well, let's see. Sarah writes, circular firing squad staff. We did it to Carter. We did it to Clinton. We did it to Gore. We did it to Chris Dodd. We did it to Howard Dean. Will we now do it to President Obama, who is responsible for saving us from another Great Depression but can't swim down and plug a gaping corporate underwater volcano? Sarah Madison. Oh, here's one of the turning off our radio show, Chris. Here we go. Joan, turning off your radio show. I was just forced to turn off your show. This is yesterday because you've let it be hijacked by anti-Obama commentators. Why don't you get someone on there to stand up, blah, blah, blah. A healthy debate is good, but you're losing control. Oh, well, let me just point something out, Joan. I have never had control of this show. If you've actually been listening, the wheels came off a long time ago. It's bad enough when Jim and Chris are so negative, but then when you get guests on there agreeing with them, take charge. Don't let them hijack your show. And if Jim is going to get all paranoid and predict terrible things, somebody needs to keep score and confront him on how far off base he gets. He and Chris are very smart, but they go around the bend a lot and are never held accountable. Why, thank you, Joan. If I wasn't drinking half the time, I would try to have some control.
Can I read one of
here.
Can I read one of my support emails?
No, we're out of time. I'm taking control. Yeah. No, go ahead.
Hey, Chris, totally agree with you. I find it interesting that we weren't allowed to voice an opinion for 8 years under Bush without being called un-American, and now our own people are doing the same thing. If we don't voice a loud opinion, the only thing the president will hear is corporate money, and that won't serve middle-class America at all.
Chris.
Yes.
Why do you hate America so much?
I hate America so much.
David in Asheville's not going to quit me. Hi, David.
Hi, Steph. Hey, just wanted to let you know that I subscribe to the Stephanie Miller podcast, only $4.95 a month when you buy a year in advance. And I don't care how much infighting or dissent you have on your show, as long as I can hear your precious fart jokes every day.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for that.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you, buddy in Columbus. You're on the Stephanie Miller show. Hey, buddy.
Hey, Mama. Both you guys are cute and pretty.
Thank
so
you.
Get along.
Hey, I'm cuter, though, right?
No, I'm cuter.
Hey, one thing people have to realize in Obama, and a little bit I can talk about, is I did election protection for his people. And they were very tight and they were very together. And they stood up there and say, he's called No Drama Obama for a reason.
Right.
He's an adult. He's going to think through things. And they also told us, you know, if you think you're going to make a scene or you're going to talk to the press or you're going to, you know, this is your moment, forget it. You can leave now.
Right. And, you know, as a guy, guess what? Real men don't have to act tough.
You know,
it's George Bush, you know.
And how the MOOCs are right, I do not see Obama understanding the real threat from the right. And it's been there from ever. You know, Carter.
Maybe he will watch Chris Matthews' special, The Rise of the New Right, tonight on MSNBC, 7 p.m.
Clinton didn't push, what was that, Iran-Contra. And then those same people turned around and impeached him over a BJ. You know, these people were out to get Obama from the get-go.
Yeah.
Because I remember, a couple days after this thing started, and watching Joe Scarborough's smug ass sit there and smile and go, this is Obama's Katrina.
Mm.
And so they're working very hard to link this to him, even though it's not.
Yep, absolutely. All right, buddy. Thank you, honey. Let's 45 minutes after the hour, back with us. So we're going to go to some crunchy audio goodness from the president's speech last night. And resume fighting as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, my God, that's kind of hot.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 50 minutes after the hour. Hey, guess what? They're giving a party for me here in New York, a goodbye party.
Who is?
Because they're so happy to see me go.
You have friends?
And I am throwing myself a welcome home party in L.A.
You are.
Rebecca has to do the e-bike because I don't understand how to do it.
What?
I'm sure she's so
And half
happy.
The people probably won't even know that I left in the first place. That's how pathetic my little life is. Mm-hmm. All right. And we've been fighting amongst ourselves, but let's all get back to hating other people. For instance, I can't wait to get back to California to get into the Meg Whitman, Carly Fiorina, Republican crazy biatch fights.
Yeah.
Neil says he just saw a new bumper sticker. Maybe you've seen this one in California, Chris. Meg Whitman, she will stone cold choke a bitch. That's funny.
Oh, that's true.
She's chubby. She's Chubby McChubberson.
Yeah. She's one of those kinds of bosses.
Yeah. See, I may not allow dissent, but at least I've never shoved you.
I think you have slapped me, though.
I have not. I have not slapped you.
You have.
See? Look at you. Any subordinate treacherous bastard can put a story out about you. And Julie writes, Dear Ms. Miller, were you aware this is the political year of the woman? Yes.
Computer says yes.
Wolf Blitzer told me that. Stephanie! Year of the woman! He doesn't really ask questions. He just makes statements, and then you have to kind of...
Yeah, he blurts things out.
Yes. Yes, Wolf. In Meg Whitman's case, it's the year of the woman who, in 2007, when she was boss of eBay, got angry and pushed a tiny Asian female employee named Young Mi Kim senseless in some eBay conference room, resulting in having to pay a six-figure settlement of some $200,000 that no one's allowed to talk about. P.S. Soon, thank Jesus, you will be back in L.A., where you can employ the Meg Whitman management method and push the H.E. double hockey sticks out of those insolent... Obama-bashing mooks of yours when they act up like they did on Monday. As Meg says below, in any high-pressure working environment, tensions can surface and can lead to professional disagreements. Cool. There's going to be shoving when I get back. It's only because I'm here in New York.
Do you shove Sean?
I'm going to employ some of that Meg Whitten hands-on management style when I get back. I'm going to take both of your heads.
You know what? On Friday, you should just shove John Fugelsang for the hell of it.
It's my new policy, shoving. All right. Let's go to Don in Rockford, Illinois. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Don.
Good morning. I'm still listening.
Oh, good. You're the one. Good.
Oh, no, no. You know there's millions of us. Listen, regulation, wanting the government to do something about a bad situation and wanting the government to take over our lives are two completely different things. If I call my congressman and say, what are you guys doing about the spill in Florida or along the coast, that doesn't mean I want cap and trade. But to me, when you're dealing with Democrats,
you don't see any connection between what's happened in the Gulf and that maybe we should try just a teensy bit to wean ourselves off our oil addiction and find other forms of energy.
Just come to
Illinois. You don't see the connection?
Just come to Illinois and see what happens when you give a drug addict $5. Then you find out they've stolen your bank account. You say, why did you do that? And they say, well, you said I could have your money.
What do drug addicts have to do with this?
Drunk with power. Addicted to power. I mean, this is how I see the Democrats. Totally going to run their show.
I'm sorry, I'm missing the analogy with the drug addict and the $5.
And you know, the Democrats have a platform, and they're succeeding in putting their platform through. So what's wrong with that?
And we oppose it, and you guys think we're right-wing fanatics.
Yes.
Wait, I need to go back, and I'm doing a U-turn, and I'm circling back to pick up the drug addict analogy. I don't get that one. What's your point?
If I call the government and say, what are you doing to investigate BP and what happened in this incredibly horrible
which they are doing.
Situation, that's going to be the time that Obama wants to put more regulations, literally choking us with his hand.
Right. Well, don't you think this is how this happened, is not enough regulation?
I don't want cap and tax. This is insanity to keep taking money from us. And just keep regulating our lives.
Thank you. When you get to the Republican talking point, the cap and tax, then bye-bye.
It's not called cap and tax. So kind of stupid for referring to it as that. It's called cap and trade.
You know, I was trying to follow a logical thought pattern there, Chris, and it seems to me that... Who can argue that there was enough regulation here? Clearly there wasn't. How can you go, I don't want... It's like, why this happened.
Yeah, and now the Republicans are screaming, why weren't these oil companies regulated enough? Like, what?
I don't... Chris, it's like when the drug addict... Huh? All right, the president...
Tonight, I'd like to lay out for you what our battle plan is going forward. I've authorized the deployment of over 17,000 National Guard members along the coast. The one answer I will not settle for is the idea that this challenge is somehow too big and too difficult to meet. You know, the same thing was said about our ability to produce enough planes and tanks in World War II.
Quite a few war analogies in the speech last night.
Quite a few war. Oh, well, because we are. You know, this is. I mean, I think what his point is, for all the people Chris has been screaming, what is he doing? They're not doing it. It's like he had to lay out what they've been doing. Right. He has deployed, obviously, a huge fleet of not just, manpower, but ships and all of that stuff. All the stuff people have been screaming, he's been doing it.
It would have been nice to have heard all of this, maybe 30 days ago.
Oh, what a shoulda, coulda. What? I don't understand that. That's what Jim always says. Oh, we should have done this. We shouldn't have done that. We should have done it this way.
Maybe we wouldn't all be so
all right, somebody's getting the car out of the ditch. It's like, you don't want to hear, well, you shouldn't have done it that way.
So you're saying that Obama drove the car into the ditch?
No.
That's what you just said. That's what you just said. You said...
He's getting the car out of the ditch that the Bush administration drove in there.
Oh, okay.
It was... Okay. The president last night.
Make no mistake. We will fight this spill with everything we've got for as long as it takes. We will make BP pay for the damage their company has caused. And we will do whatever is necessary to help the Gulf Coast and its people recover from this tragedy.
Jeff in Milwaukee, my trucker friend. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Listen, I wanted to apologize to your millions and millions of listeners because I voted for George W. Bush both times.
Ooh.
And, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
But your last caller that you had from Rockford, he's the reason that I left the Republican Party. They talk out of both sides of their mouth. They want the government to take care of this, and why aren't they doing more? But then they don't want the government to do anything.
Right. So it's hard to follow the thought pattern of watching what's happening in the Gulf and go, well, you know, the problem here is too much regulation. What?
Yeah, exactly. And that regulation was done under Bush as well, and under actually all administrations. Nobody really did their job on that. We all agree on that, I think. But
yep.
But as far as this Gulf spill, I think President Obama is doing anything he can do. But I really believe that the American people should stand behind the president. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat.
It is a huge national disaster. Thank you. I got another email from the president yesterday. Yes, I will stand with you, no, Mr. President.
No. Well, then send him money.
58 minutes after the hour, right back. That's where you lose me. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.